Hello, everybody. Welcome back to episode 1 of season 3. Today, we are answering all of our listener and Instagram questions in a Q&A. And then later, we have a very exciting and special announcement that Kat and I have been working on in an up and coming project. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to season 3, episode 1. It has been a hot minute since you and I have recorded.
No, it feels like forever. It's honestly probably been like 2 months.
Would that be right? Do you think it's been 2 months?
I think so.
Oh my goodness. No wonder it feels like starting.
How do we do this again? How do I podcast? My darling, sweet angel, beautiful, wise, clever, athletic.
Keeping coming.
Stunning.
Stunning,
calm, stunning. Patient, very compassionate. Darling Hutto, how are you?
I'm not going to be able to walk out of this room now with all those compliments. My head will be so big. I am fantastic. Today is a very exciting day for us. We have been working tirelessly on our new project that we are so excited to share with you.
It's like our baby. I feel like we're giving birth today to something very exciting.
Yes, it's been amazing. So we can't wait to announce it at the end of this episode. So stay tuned. Other than that, I think that's pretty much all I've done with my life for the last.
I know. That's all. We've been doing so much behind the scenes stuff. Everyone's like, How are you? What are you doing? I'm like, not much really, just the business.
So we are now little business besties. Very exciting. This is the furthest I've ever been in a relationship. Wow.
And like, cool. We're legally bound with a contract now. So
it's crazy. You can never leave me.
Yeah, I'll find you.
I've just been working as usual, and our, you know, our little side project that is not so little. I've been on holidays for a little bit. I went to one of my good girlfriend's hen's weekends in the Hunter Valley, and that was really beautiful.
Looks stunning.
It was stunning. But what about you? Tell me about you. How have you been?
Oh, look, very good. I mean, it's been a long time. I've been feeling very busy at the moment. Obviously, we've been working on our little baby, but other things, I guess, work is hectic at the moment. Also, wedding planning, not sure what's happening. That's another stress in my life. So I'm really that meme. I know we always mention it. The dog in the house that's on fire saying everything's fine.
I feel right now.
But I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Say fine one more time.
Yeah. No, I'm good. So please tell me, Amy, your pit and peak of the week.
Okie dokie. So I think my peak of the week has to be the announcement we will be making. I'm sorry I keep mentioning it and then not saying what it is.
Our Instagram, you're the worst clickbaiter ever.
Our Instagram followers will already know what we're talking about. But for those of you who don't follow us on Instagram, the Psychology Sisters.
Shameless plug.
That has to be my peak, that we're launching the thing that we've been working on for a few weeks now and been putting a lot of time.
A few weeks, girlfriend.
Okay, 6 months.
It's been one of you weeks.
Jeez. Okay, six months. For half a year, maybe longer than that. Who knows at this point? It's all a blur. That's my peak, that all of our hard work has come to fruition, and I'm just so excited to begin our new venture together. And my pit is probably after coming off the back of a 4-day hens weekend, and I know this sounds really like first world problems, coming off the back of a 4-day hens weekend, straight back into work, and work for me too has been super, super chaotic. I've had a ton of new referrals and a lot of clients that have, had increased stress and anxiety based on current climate. And then the launch of our new project, I've just felt a bit overwhelmed this week with everything going on and found it a little bit difficult to balance my roles as, you know, a daughter, spending time with my dad, a partner, giving time to my relationship, you know, wanting to put my heart and soul into what we're working on together, and not neglecting our friends and my full-time job and that kind of thing. So I can't imagine what it would be like having a wedding on top of all that. Don't know how you do it, Kat.
Yeah, but Ames, like you put you I feel like the difference between you and I is you're very detail oriented. You spend so much time going over through things and you do things really, really well. I like to tick things off. You know, I like to get stuff done. By the end of the day, I can switch off. Whereas you work pretty hard, pretty damn hard. I think you spend a lot more time at work than I do. So it's all relative, but I totally can absolutely sympathize with you there with the balance. And we always say this, balance is never perfect. Balance is one day, if you get out of bed, that's amazing. The next day you might be able to do five more things than what you did. So it's, and you know, we're in a season of hustle, I like to call it. We are in a season where we are working so hard on our professional lives, and sometimes other things do take a backseat. And it's almost like it's almost like a remembering, oh gosh, I've neglected this part of my life. I need to remember to do that. But I think you're doing so well, Ames. It's 100%. Not an easy time.
Well, what is your pit and peak?
My pit and peak. Well, obviously I have to share the same peak with you. I'm so excited. We have been working on this for such a long time. And I think when we first became friends, we originally had this idea and we, you know, it was always just, I guess a future idea. We hadn't really put pen to paper and organized something, but I think it's just, you know, we were very lucky. We worked very hard, but we were also in the right time at the right place. So
yeah,
I'm just so excited to start this with you and to see where it leads us and hopefully get a therapy dog.
Kat and I put together this goal board that is in my little study at home, and right at the top of our like pyramid of goals is therapy dog. Like once we get that therapy dog, we know we've made it.
It's our own version of the hierarchy of needs with a therapy dog as the most important. That's the dream. As a psychologist, having a therapy dog is, we've made it.
You know, even if we can have a couple of therapy dogs.
Do you know the other day I recommended pet therapy to a client and
love that.
I was like, I need to be there on the first session. It's just protocol. Really, I just wanted to pat the dog.
Need to make sure this dog's, you know, licks and affection is up to scratch.
It's quality control of the darling dog. But yeah, so that's my peak. I'm so, so excited to start this new venture with you and just for the future, whatever the future will bring. For my pit, I wanted to bring up something that I have been thinking a lot about the last few months. I haven't mentioned it on the podcast before, Ames. I've obviously talked to you about it, but I lost a client, I think it was about 2 months ago, and my client passed away. And it's been a really, I wanted to bring it up because it's such a, for anyone who works closely with people of clients or in any of the health industries or customer relations industries, it's a really strange feeling. And it's something that I've never experienced before professionally. And understanding and talking about it is, you know, something I want to bring to the table today because it's just been something that has affected me more than I thought that it would. And it's just been really hard. And that's been my pit, is dealing with that as a professional. And I think as a professional, you just have these expectations that the grief is not as deep or it doesn't affect you as much, but it absolutely does. I think as a therapist, we get to know clients quite well and we get to know who they are and their lives and the ins and outs and their quirks. And I think that's a stereotype that we switch off at the end of each day and we don't think about clients, but we do, we really do. And yeah, it's just been something that I have been getting through and dealing with everything else that's going on. Obviously COVID is awful and what's happening. And but at the same time, it's just been, really affecting me and I wanted to talk about it.
But I know that is something that, you know, has had quite a large impact on you, as it would for, I think, most healthcare practitioners. And I think it's important to talk about as well. I think even though it is a professional relationship, as you said, it's still a relationship. A lot of our work is based on connecting to people and, you know, building relationships. So when we lose a client, it definitely does trigger a multitude of emotions. And yeah, I think it's important, like you say, that we have these conversations and that you look after yourself too, because you are, you know, going through lots and lots of different things. You have a lot on your plate. And I know as it's in our nature, I think, as mental health care workers to constantly want to help and give to others. So when something like this happens and, you know, we're impacted by it, it's really, really important that we're looking after ourselves and also seeking our own support too, which I know that you're really good at.
It's just been something that I haven't experienced before, especially as a clinician. I mean, obviously, you know, I've closed clients' files and or they've moved away, but to experience this is really, it's been very difficult, and it's been something I didn't expect to be as difficult as it is. And, you know, that we're therapists, we're human and we can't switch off our emotions. So yeah, just something that I've been dealing with, and I hope that if anyone else has felt the same thing, that they can relate and understand and just know that it's okay to not feel okay sometimes. On another note, let us dive straight into today's episode. We have gotten, since we've been on break, we have gotten so many messages for questions and episode ideas, and awesome. We love hearing from you guys. Thank you so much for everyone that writes in. So we thought, instead of doing each question as an episode, we're going to do some quick fire Q&A just to get up to speed with everyone's questions, because sometimes they get lost in the DM. So we thought, let's try and work through them today and hopefully offer a bit of further information for our listeners. These questions, they're quite broad and I feel like they could be relevant to so many different people. So we tried to keep them as relevant and general as possible. But yeah, I'm so excited. I love Q&As. Q&As are so much fun.
I love Q&As too. And also, just a little reminder, our answers to these listener questions is not in replacement of personal psychological advice or intervention. As Kat mentioned, these are just really general answers that might you know, give you a little bit more insight or understanding if you are maybe experiencing a similar situation, just to give you a little bit more information. We do always like to say that this is not in replacement of personalized psychological advice.
Yeah. And if there is any impact on your life, please, please, please reach out for some support.
Let's jump in. Do you want to go first?
Do it. Okay. I'm going to ask the question, so you have to answer it. Okay, this is not a question, it is more of a statement, but please describe the different fighting styles and what happens if you have a different fighting style to your partner.
Okay, I think this is a great question and something that comes up a lot for couples and friendships as well, or family members. I think it has a lot to do with your attachment. So if you have a secure attachment style, you have learned that turning to others to support or sharing emotion is a good thing. That makes you feel safe and loved, and you feel comfortable going to someone to talk about a conflict. So a couple with a secure attachment style can have a massive argument over something really small, like, I don't know, bed sheets. And still feel really close to each other, and still feel like, you know, they're heard. I think three important questions that you kind of ask yourself is, are you there for me? Will you respond to me? Will you engage with me? And those with a secure attachment feel like all those questions are kind of answered. Even if it's like a really big, serious argument, you are still able to, you know, enter in a conflict without feeling like the other person doesn't love you, or you're not worthy, or you'll lose them if you bring up something. And that's very different to someone with an anxious attachment who, you know, might worry a lot around self-worth, or they might have a fear of rejection. So a person with an anxious attachment style might feel like if they bring up something, their partner might not be there for them at the end of a disagreement. So a person with a higher anxiety attachment style can be destructive in the way they argue. They might be really critical. They might show contempt and hostility because it's a defensive mechanism. So it's more of, well, I'll reject you before you can reject me, or that kind of thing. And then you've got the avoidant attachment styles too. So that approach, you've learned that turning to someone else is not a good idea, and you have to solve everything on your own because the people that are meant to support you haven't been there for you. Mm. So they'll often find it really, really hard to trust that they can go to others with conflict, and that they'll often be quite withdrawn, closed off, and distant. So things like the silent treatment are really common to those with. Yeah. Yep, definitely. So when arguing, they'll usually tend to stonewall the other person, walk away, go silent, change the topic or not engage. So oftentimes, and I've spoken about this before, so I won't go too much into it, but oftentimes the avoidant will be paired with the anxious attachment style. They're really attracted to each other, and things can get really, really messy with these styles because they often just completely misunderstand each other. So the more the anxious kind of comes for the avoidant, the more the avoidant will push the other person away.
Yeah, so there's not much I can really add on top of that, but I think this question is fantastic because what it's saying is that they've acknowledged that there is different fighting styles. I think when we go into relationships, we don't think about fighting styles, communication styles, love languages. We just think everyone fights the same, everyone talks the same, everyone shows love the same. So really acknowledging that it's okay to have different fighting styles. It's just about working through them and acknowledging that that person fights differently to you doesn't mean that there's anything wrong in the relationship. That's just what they've grown up to know or what's been modeled to them. So really acknowledging that, and then recognizing that with your partner and sitting down when you're both feeling calm. Hey, when you get angry at me, I withdraw. Or when, you know, you get angry at me, I get anxious and I become a bit more dependent and I want to kind of hold on to you a bit longer. So I guess coming up with a bit of a plan for when you fight, you know, sometimes just taking a 20-minute break from each other can be so, so helpful when you're fighting. So I think every couple's different. We can't give advice what's the perfect way to fight. Fighting's normal though. Just remember that fighting's healthy. It's just how you fight and how you come back together as a couple. So whether that might be if you're a couple that sometimes need a break, or if you like to sit and talk through things, or if you need to talk to friends or your support network. So figuring out what works for you both. And yes, I guess when you're calm, it's a lot better to talk about the action plan than when you're fired up and frustrated. So yeah, I think just acknowledging those, I guess, roadblocks when you're fighting. And also when we fight, I don't know about you, but I get really anxious, my heartbeat, I get angry, I get really clammy. So really taking note of those physiological responses to fighting. I mean, when someone fights with us, our brain tells us that there's an attack on us, and we generally go into that protective mechanism, which is why we stonewall or why we withdraw. So we need to remind our body that we're safe. There's no harm. Unless it's like a physical fight, then definitely you need to reach out for some emergency support. But if it's more of a yelling or that the stonewall or the withdrawal, helping to calm your central nervous system down is so important. So taking a deep breaths, taking a walk outside. Do you know, have you ever watched How I Met Your Mother? They've got a really awesome, you know how Lily and Marshall have the timeout when they're fighting? So that's a really awesome way as well. When you're in the middle of a fight and you just need to take yourself away, having a timeout is fantastic. So
definitely. And one thing I'll recommend to couples that are struggling with arguing or fighting, because it is normal, we all, like Kat said, we all argue and fight, is something called attune. And I think I've mentioned this in a previous podcast as well, but it's from Gottman's theory, and the A stands for being aware of the other person's feelings. The T is turning towards them, and that means both physically, you know, having eye contact, and emotionally as well. Which can be hard to do in the moment, like Kat's saying. So it is good to have that break. Then there's T, tolerate their expression of emotion, which is really, really hard to do. Maybe not if they're being violent or abusive. Mm. That's not something that we would ever tolerate. Understand. So try to understand where they're coming from. Again, not always easy to do, but ask open questions. Let the other person express themselves so you can understand more clearly, and to check if you're understanding them correctly. You know, we're human. Sometimes we misinterpret things. You know, we're all unique individuals, and sometimes we'll have a different perspective on the situation. So sometimes getting clarity and understanding about where your partner's coming from can be really helpful in working through conflict. Using non-defensive language, so not name calling or blaming, things like just, you know, saying things like I feel, I statements are really good. And then the last one is E, empathy. So having empathy for how the other person is feeling in the situation, it doesn't mean you have to agree with them. You can disagree with someone and still empathize with how they feel, even if it's the most frustrating, annoying thing ever. We still want to have empathy for our partner or our friend or our family member. And, you know, even if you think that they're ridiculous, we can still validate how they feel because that's their feelings and all feelings and emotions are valid.
Question number two. I mean, this is actually quite similar. This is, how do we deal with difficult relationships at home? If you can't separate yourself physically, what can you do? So this is a very similar to question number one, except this is maybe more talking about families that you live with. Obviously during COVID, there's probably been a lot more people staying at home than usual. I think what we want to just emphasize here, that if there's ever any verbal or physical aggression, that's never okay, and please reach out for support. But if it's more like ongoing conflict or just toxic relationships or just finding it hard, lots of personality clashes, I think for me, I would recommend that you do reach out for your own support network as much as possible. If you can't see them physically, calling, video contact, anything you can do to reach out for some support, because when you're at home around some people more than you would like, it can be really easy to forget about your other social supports, and they can provide some sanity for you as well. So I think that's number one, really important that you make sure you've got a really good support network around you. I'd also kind of say that people's behavior is a lot more to do with them than it is with you, and understanding what's happened with that person. It's almost taking a bit of an outsider's perspective, an outsider's look is, if what has happened for that person to act that way, and you'll probably figure out that it's a lot less to do with your actions or behaviors and a lot more to do with maybe how they've grown up, or, you know, events that have happened to them in their life, or, you know, even just their genetics. So really, I would always recommend that. It can be really hard to do that, but that can provide a real depersonalization of the situation and takes yourself out of the equation a little bit, that it's not your fault. Perhaps there's something going on for that person that you're, you know, it's not nothing that you did in particular. Perhaps it was just, you know, something you did or said was a trigger for them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's your fault completely.
100%. I completely agree. And the only thing I would add to that is, if you can't physically separate yourself from a difficult home situation, create an environment at home that provokes calm, you know, less stress. Practice things that you can do at home for self-care, whether it be, you know, like a little at-home yoga session or having a bath or listening to music, watching a movie by yourself. I think do things within your control that still create mental space from the people at home that might be, you might be having conflict or difficulty with. You know, I know sometimes it's really difficult, especially if you live in an apartment with roommates, or you might be sharing a room with someone that you have a lot of conflict with. But I think it's important to still practice things within your scope to still make room for time for yourself and self-care.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's wonderful. I think, you know, we were talking about fighting styles before. Acknowledging their fighting style is really important, and your fighting style, acknowledging their communication style and yours, acknowledging love languages and how that's different, that applies to family and flatmates as well. So it's okay if you do communicate differently to them. It's just recognizing that you might have different ways of dealing with conflict, and that's okay. Okay, question number four. This is a two-pronged question. When do you know if it's you or your partner causing the problems in your relationship, or if your mental health is a problem, or if someone uses your mental health problems as an excuse? Lots to unpack here. Okay. Amy, tell me, when do you know if it's you or your partner causing the problems in your relationship?
I think this is such a common question that a lot of people struggling in their relationship might be trying to weigh up. And I think there is no correct answer for this question. I think if you are questioning whether it's you or your partner that is causing a problem in the relationship, it's both of you. I don't think there is ever a conflict in a relationship where solely one person is to blame. I know that is a very simplistic way to answer a very complex question, but I think a relationship is all about meeting the needs of both. And there, you know, we have two individual people in this relationship. And it takes, you know, two people to make a healthy relationship work and to maintain a healthy relationship. So if your relationship is going through a bit of a rough patch, there's usually some work on both ends.
It could be, yeah. And it does take two to tango. The next bit is, if your mental health is a problem or if someone uses your mental health problems as an excuse. This is tricky because I believe that if one part of the relationship or if both people have a mental health concern, I think, you know, coming together as a team is so important. I don't think it's completely up to one person to try and, in quotation marks, fix their own mental health concerns or try and support on their own. I think there needs to be teamwork here. And I think, you know, that naturally will come with healthy relationships. There'll be that support, there'll be that love, there'll be that understanding. But it's also acknowledging that, for example, if it's you with the mental health concern, you can't just rely solely on your partner for full support. Your partner might not have the skills or the tools. They might just not know how to support you properly. And if there is a concern, reaching out for professional support is so, so important, because leaning on professionals, leaning on your friends, leaning on your family, as well as leaning on your partner, can really, you know, having that collaborative approach to mental health can be super important.
Yeah, definitely. I think being really curious as to what they might be perceiving as a problem in the relationship. Like we were saying, sometimes it can be a misunderstanding, and other times it might be that maybe they need to, you know, be a little bit more empathetic and understanding as to, you know, why you might do some things differently to how they do things, or why, you know, for example, say someone that struggles with social anxiety, it might be really hard for you to go out to, you know, social events, to socialize with their friends, to, you know, leave the house or those kinds of things. So if they're someone that gets really angry at that and then blames arguments on you because you don't want to do things, maybe just a conversation around why that might be difficult for you and different things that you might be able to do together to help manage that social anxiety. That makes sense. But yeah, I think that's really important in moving forward as a couple if there does seem to be a little bit of tension or a little bit of conflict around mental health problems.
Yeah. I love that we were like, these are quick fire questions. We'll rapidly make it through, but we never do anything quickly. Oh, goodness. Classic psych. Okay. Question number five. Studying through COVID and fear of failing or not making it into masters. Great question. Ames, what are your thoughts, feelings?
Oh, I think fear of failure is going to be there whether it is COVID or not COVID, especially if you are studying psychology. The fear of not making it into masters is so, so real. And Kat and I have been there. I think it is a really daunting, anxiety-provoking time. And then add COVID pandemic on top. Oh my goodness. I really feel for everyone who is studying through this climate. My studying tips would be breathe. Breathe. You can only do your best and your best will be good enough. I, for example, my trajectory was not how I saw it at first. I really wanted to do a master's of clinical psychology and I didn't. I ended up doing a master's of psychotherapy because things changed and that was okay. And I am exactly where I need to be. So I think breathe, look after your stress, and be as organized as you can be without, I think, focusing too much on academic excellence and, you know, nailing everything, because you can't.
Yeah, it's impossible to be perfect and receive HDs and everything. And I think also uni, if you fail a subject, you can do it again. You have the advantage of going in and trying again, and you would probably know a little bit more than everybody else because you've already done that. So I think not looking at it as a roadblock, but more just a chance to grow more and to learn more is really important. And that's the beauty of uni. If you fail something, you're not going to get kicked out of uni. You know, you just got to try it again, start again, even though it can be frustrating. Obviously, when you're in uni, I think there's such this, there's this like discussion that
it's like the be all and end all.
And I think we've said this in so many episodes, and I've really noticed this since finishing uni. Unis are a business. Unis want to make money. They will tell you to do a master's or do a PhD or do more postgrad because you need to. But when you step out, you realize that, oh, I probably didn't need to do that, or oh, okay, I could have done that a different way. I didn't need to go to uni. Unis are there to make money. So they will obviously try and sell you more uni courses. A really good tip is to go online and look at the jobs that you want to apply for. Go and seek whatever. Look at the criteria of what they need. You know, sometimes I know Josh, my partner, he did a master's. He's an occupational therapist. He did a master's in OT. He got to the end of it and he realized he didn't need to do a master's. That's just because it looked fancy, but his employers didn't care whether he did a master's or not. They wanted to know that he was good at his job. So that's a really good way to see exactly what they need and what they're asking of you. So of course, some courses need masters, but a lot of courses don't. And I think especially in psych, I don't know what this question, what this person is studying, but in psych, yeah, we were sold clinical psych. If you don't get into clinical psych, you have to do a PhD. If you don't do a PhD, you're screwed pretty much. It's so inaccurate. I got out and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't get into masters of clin psych. But then after a couple months of researching, I was like, there's so many other ways to become a psychologist, or there's so many other pathways and aims similar to you. You did a different master's and you're exactly where you need to be and you love what you do. So just expect that what you hear at uni is not always 100% correct. Just remember that they have other motives, especially to do with money. So
failing a unit at uni or a couple of units at uni is not the end of the road for you.
And it doesn't mean that you're going to be bad at your job. Uni is so different to actual work. I remember being so nervous about stats and I was like, oh my gosh, if I fail at stats, I'm going to be so bad being a psychologist. Absolutely not. I barely use stats at the moment. So just remember that if you are failing at university or you feel like you're not doing well, that doesn't mean that you'll be less competent at your job. Sometimes uni, it's just a piece of paper. Sometimes it's studying things that are so irrelevant to your job, but it's just not. I think uni is just, they want to see that you can stick it out for 3 years.
And I think if you are really worried about failing or not making it into masters, that means that this is something that's really important to you and you really, really want to do well at it. So I think use that motivation, use, you know, that drive to be the best student you can be, and, you know, do things that are within your control. There are, you know, COVID-19 is out of your control. It's out of everyone's control, and it's, you know, really, really uncertain times. So do things that you know you can do to kind of help assist you in achieving your goals.
My friend went through a lot of emotional trauma in childhood. I was raised very differently and had a lot of love. Due to this, we have a lot of conflict, as I think she is constantly in fight or flight mode. She always apologizes for opening up and she constantly feels like a burden. She's had bad experiences with therapists in the past and isn't likely to try again. How can I help her?
I think, like, and this is, I could talk about this question for hours, but I think the important thing to remember, if you're a friend supporting anyone with it, whether it be trauma or a mental health illness, the important thing to remember is you are not the therapist. It is not your job to fix 20 years of childhood trauma. the best thing you can do as someone's friend is just let them know that you are there for them when they are ready to talk. And if they don't want to talk, then that's fine. You are just there as a listening ear. And that will honestly be so much more than what you think it would do. I think when we see someone that we love and care about in pain or, you know, in distress, we want to help. We want to fix them. Mm. We want to alleviate their stress and their emotional pain. The best way to do that is just to listen with no judgment and really be there for them.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. I think if your friend, as you said, is constantly in fight or flight mode there and there was emotional trauma, there's probably a bit of mistrust with people and maybe she doesn't let a lot of people in. So I think just showing her with your actions that you are there regardless. You don't have to, as Amy was saying, be a therapist or say the right things. I think people who maybe don't trust people open up a lot. The best way that you can help them is by showing them that you're there on their good days, on their bad days, because they will learn to trust you and find a secure friendship with you, which is so important. And that's really helpful for them. So yeah, really recommend that as well.
Okay. Next question. How to help a friend with an eating disorder and what to say to someone who refuses to eat?
Okay. We get asked this question so much. This is obviously very common. I think an eating disorder is just that. It's a disorder. Nothing that you do or say is going to make your friend eat because they have got a lot of years or, you know, a lot of time that they've spent not liking themselves and a lot of dysmorphic thinking about their body. Nothing you say or do is going to change their behavior. As much as that really sucks to hear, it's like saying, my friend has bipolar, how can I fix her? You know, we can't, you know, as a friend. And in our last question, you are her friend, you're not her therapist. You don't have to say anything if she refuses to eat. As much as instinctively, if we have a friend who's in pain and we can see isn't eating and isn't getting nutrients and is losing weight, instinctively, of course, we're going to say, please eat. You know, we go into almost that mum mode of, oh my gosh, they're not well. I need to look after them. I want to protect them. But you can't. That's not your job. Your job is to be there as a friend. And I think also, especially with eating disorders, people who suffer from eating disorders might see other people telling them to eat as a threat. They don't want to eat. They don't want to get better. They want to keep losing weight or achieve a goal of their body that is so set in stone that nothing you say can change that. So the more that you tell someone to eat or stop exercising so much, or, you know, maybe judging their choices, the less likely they are to open up to you and trust you. And I think as friends, we want that open communication. We want that unconditional, you know, love for them. We want no, it's really hard to not judge someone and to kind of say, I know best. I, you know, you used to be so much healthier or used to look so much better or whatever. What's important is that you're there, you're not judging them and you are supporting them when they are ready. They might not ever be ready, but that's not your choice to decide when they're ready and when they need to get help. That's really up to them, unfortunately.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's also important to remember that a person with an eating disorder is likely to be experiencing a lot of psychological pain or emotional pain. And although it can be very difficult watching someone or very frustrating watching someone not eat or excessively exercise, that has been their coping mechanism for a really long time. And eating disorders aren't resolved overnight. People often take a while to change their behaviors. So try not to be upset or frustrated with a person that might revert back to you know, their distorted eating patterns. I think it's also important to be mindful that everyone is different. We don't all experience things the same. So making the decision to access professional support or to get help can be so, so difficult for some people. And if your friend is finding it hard to accept your offer of help, it's important not to take it personally. They might just not be ready. And like Kat said, sometimes it can even be more of a threat to them. They might perceive that as a threat. So just remember to look after yourself as well. I think when you're trying to be there for someone that's going through something like an eating disorder, it can be a lot of pressure and stress, and it can be really hard to see some of the effects that relate to things like anorexia and bulimia. So remember to look after yourself as well and get support if you need it. If you need to talk to someone about things that you're seeing or you know, some things that you're experiencing through supporting someone, that's really important too. So I think, yeah, like we said, the most important thing you can do is just to listen if they want to talk, and let them know that you're there. But other than that, that is all you're responsible for.
Okay, question number 8. I have noticed a big change in my attitude and personality recently. I've been feeling more sensitive and easily annoyed. I can't help myself but be mad at things like my boyfriend being 15 minutes late or my brother poking fun at me. I'm self-aware that I'm being overdramatic, but I just can't help but feel angry about it. Really great question. And I do want to say that, are you being overdramatic? Like, what has happened? What has changed? Because something has changed for you. I think it sounds like obviously these things are happening for a reason. Has something changed? You know, we are going through a pandemic. It's okay to be on edge. It's okay to feel. I have been certainly more sensitive in my relationship. We are going through such a stressful time. I think it's great that this person is really self-aware of their behavior, but I think that this person is really quick to dismiss her own feelings, because I reckon there is something going on underneath the surface that has happened that's making this person feel frustrated. What do you think, Ames, when you read this question?
I could not agree with you more. Beautifully answered. I think for this person, it might be really helpful to notice what's triggering her. I know that she's saying it's a few different things, like her brother and her boyfriend being late, but kind of when did she start to feel like things changed, and what kind of things are happening throughout her day where she notices she might feel a little bit more irritable or have a little bit less tolerance, because anger doesn't just happen. You know, there are lots of little things that we might not be conscious of that kind of lead to those angry outbursts, or, you know, we often refer to anger as a secondary emotion. So is it that exactly like you've said, Kat, we're a bit on edge, where we're all feeling a little bit uneasy at the moment, and it's so normal for our tolerance to go down when we are in that, you know, hyper aroused state. So I think noticing our triggers and just being aware of things that are happening throughout the day which might contribute to that is really important. And also, exactly like you said, Kat, 100%, your feelings are valid. Your emotional responses are valid. I think it's perfectly reasonable to get a bit annoyed if someone's 15 minutes late. And I think it's so normal to get annoyed at your siblings when they poke fun at you.
Mine still do. And I'm 28 years old. It's very normal to be frustrated.
Yeah, I think whatever you're feeling at the moment, it is so valid. And those are very normal things to be a bit reactive to, especially if your tolerance is low. But I always say, you know yourself better than anyone. And if you are feeling like something is a bit off, like something isn't sitting right with you and you're feeling a bit out of sorts, it might be helpful to explore it with a therapist or, you know, another family member or a friend, just to get some extra support.
Yeah. And, you know, it could even be things that are hormonal, sleep, diet, exercise. Mm. So much is changing at the moment. So it could be also be a somatic response. When we don't sleep as well, I'm so easily frustrated when my hormones are out of whack or it's coming up to my period. Man, I'm like a bomb about to go off. So just, you know, remembering that those things happen in your body, and maybe just taking a moment to acknowledge if there's any change in your life recently. Probably, I can assume there is. We are in the middle of a pandemic.
So just be kind to yourself. Give yourself a little bit of slack. Practice some self-compassion, definitely. Mm-hmm. I actually have a really funny story. I literally turned into the Hulk this morning. I put fake tan on last night because we're going out for dinner, and I put it on and it said leave on for 1 hour. But last time I left it on for 1 hour, it didn't develop. So I was I'm just going to sleep in it. It'll be fine.
Oh, Amy Hudson, so, no.
I woke up this morning, went and did a spin class. And luckily I left the spin class a little bit earlier because we had an interview to prep for. And it was dark when I left because the spin class room is dark. And when I walked into the bathrooms of the gym, looked in the mirror, my face was green.
What? Like, what happened?
Not just like a little, like not just like a little bit of a green, like I'm amazing. Talking like the color of a dark leaf plant.
Why? Why was it green?
Like sweat streaks. I think I had over-baked myself in fake tan. So I literally turned into the Hulk this morning.
That's amazing. And like, man, going back to this question, when my brothers poke fun of me, I get so frustrated. It's like, I'm 28 years old. Like, please don't treat me like I'm 7 again. So completely get it.
Yep. Your feelings are validated.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay. Number 9, when you've tried multiple psychologists, but don't feel like they understand and they look at me like, oh, it's just a breakup. You should get over it. Any help or advice? Oh, firstly, I want to apologize. Like, sorry that you haven't found the right psychologist and sorry that they made you feel like you weren't being heard or listened to, or there was some dismissive. It sounds like they were a little bit dismissive perhaps. So really sorry that's happened to you. Ames and I always say finding the right psychologist and counselor is so important, and it can take a couple of goes and it can be frustrating, but I think just finding, it sounds like perhaps you need to find the right one.
Yeah, I think sometimes as frustrating as it is, it can take a few goes before you find someone that you really click with. That's how I always like to say, you won't click with every clinician, but finding the right psychologist who you feel really understands you and hears you is really important. It's kind of like finding a good pair of jeans. You know, you might try on a few different sizes, a few different, you know, shapes and styles, and then you find a pair of jeans that just really hug you and support you and make you feel really comfortable. So
what an analogy, Amy Hudson. An analogy. That's right? Phenomenal.
Next question is workplace bullying and how to cope with it.
Oh my goodness. This is awful. I'm sorry that you're going through workplace bullying. That's really awful to hear. Be interested to know what, I guess, the context of this, what has happened. Obviously, I mean, we're not sure of what your workplace is, but please, please, please reach out to HR. It's really important that, especially in a workplace, we've talked about this before, Ames. Sometimes in a workplace, we feel like, oh, I don't want to speak up. I don't want to get in any trouble. I don't want to cause a fuss. But it's really important that you feel safe at your workplace. You have the right to feel safe and secure at your workplace. Also reach out. Hopefully your company has EAP, which is a free counseling service. So, yeah. Definitely reach out to HR, talk them through it. If they're not listening, go higher.
100%. I completely agree. I think definitely name it. It's really important. Words are powerful. And although it can be super intimidating, exactly like Kat said, sometimes we don't want to speak up. I think that is where you can regain some of the power. If someone is, intimidating you, saying things that are really unkind, or you feel like, just unsafe in your work environment, words are powerful, and learning to, name what is happening to you allows allows you to access the resources and develop an action plan to deal with what's happening to you. By naming it, you put the fault on them. Like, you make it their responsibility. They have to acknowledge and take ownership that what they're doing is not okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really important. I think workplace bullying is such a something that isn't really talked about a lot. It's not really mainstream to talk about workplace bullying. I used to work in a company that dealt a lot with workplace bullying. That's why I'm saying, it is HR's responsibility, or your manager, or your sit down with you and listen through this. Please, if anyone dismisses you, go higher and go higher, because they have a responsibility as an employer to make sure that you feel supported and they take you seriously. Okay, next question. I love this question. I've been excited to answer this question for a long time. I was wondering if you could delve into the histrionic, in brackets, drama queen personality. Why do some people get dragged into these personalities?
Great question. I love this question too. Would you like to kick us off, Kat?
Sure. So the histrionic or drama queen personality, it is a personality disorder. It's characterized by constant attention seeking, perhaps that theatrical personality, emotional overreaction, and sometimes seductive or sexualized behavior. Women are more likely to present with histrionic personality disorder. People who have this tend to over-dramatize situations, and sometimes this can really cause some issues in relationships and may often lead to longer term mental health concerns. So it's a really interesting disorder that isn't obviously very well spoken about. People may confuse it for narcissism or just someone who's overdramatic or a drama queen or a drama king. And the question also says, why do some people get dragged into? I'm not sure if they mean why do they... the causes of it, or why they get dragged into these personalities of someone, of their friend that has this. So I'm not sure what they mean, but I think with any personality disorder, it can come back to nature versus nurture. It's not something that people can wake up with one day. It is something that develops over time.
Oh, I was just going to say something really similar. It can stem from childhood events or our attachment to our primary caregivers, as most psychological disorders or mental health issues. And you know, the thing with this personality disorder is the real causes are unknown. So there are evidence to support genetic vulnerabilities, and there is evidence to support attachment and childhood events too. But people with this disorder are usually able to function at, you know, a pretty high level and do well in social and professional environments. But they do tend to have a little bit of a higher rate of depression when their romantic relationships end, and they often fail to see their role in things. So usually they'll tend to, instead of taking responsibility in their relationships, whether it's a conflict or whether the relationship has failed, those with the disorder typically tend to just blame others. Because they really struggle to see their own role in a situation realistically. And because they tend to crave excitement, they may place themselves in a lot of risky situations and engage in a lot of risk-taking behaviors. And that can also lead to, I guess, comorbidity with other mental illness as well.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, this personality disorder. I think we should definitely do an episode on it.
We can.
It'd be really, really interesting to talk about it. But it is really, I think, you know, we might think, oh, that friend I have or that person that I know, she's just such a drama queen. But there actually might be more underneath it. And as Ames was saying, there is a lot more beneath the surface. Often when we see clients who are attention seeking, there's usually so much more to their story, often neglect in childhood, or they felt like, you know, they're seeking that attention elsewhere because they never received it as a child. So I think just being compassionate towards those personality types.
And self-worth as well. Self-worth is huge. Maybe they feel unworthy or unlovable, and so they, you know, that's their coping mechanism. A lot of the time, people who do have narcissistic tendencies or attention seeking behaviors, it really does stem from a low sense of self.
Or that theatrics, or that, you know, that real public displays of emotion, that might be an overcompensation. You know, that might be I want attention, look at me, because I felt like I didn't receive that in childhood, or I, for some other reason. So yeah, it's really interesting, this personality disorder, but I think we should definitely do an episode on it.
Definitely. And another thing I think would be really interesting to touch on too would be sexualized behavior and promiscuity, where that stems from, because that is also a component of this disorder, but also, you know, stems from a lot of attachment related experiences. So I think that'd be cool too.
All right, let's do it.
I love this question so much because, oh my goodness.
Which one? Oh, the best friend one?
Can relate. So the question is, when your best friend gets another best friend, finding it hard to share them.
Oh, such a tricky sit. Can totally relate. It's hard. I feel like there is that protection over your best friend. Your best friend is your person that knows everything about you. You've probably been quite vulnerable with that best friend. There's that special connection. So completely understand that. And I think let's go back to early ancestors. I think, you know, our survival was really based on how many people we had around us and our tribe, I guess. So to share that person that you trust is almost like a threat to your survival, even though modern day we're going to survive without our best friend. it's, it really goes back to those instincts of protectiveness, defense, that real, almost aggression. It's like, hey, that's my resource, not yours.
Like territorial.
Yeah,
right?
Territorial. Like I was here first. We regress a lot when it comes to sharing our resources and our people. So
definitely. And I'm just going to name it. Jealousy is real. Mm. And I think it's normal to get a little bit jealous when someone, like Kat said, like you really connect with and like that's your person, when they start spending time with other people. It's so human and normal to get a little bit jealous. And I think that can be really difficult. It can be a bit of a bitter pill to swallow when you are experiencing a bit of jealousy, but know that it's normal. From time to time, we'll all experience this situation. And yeah. I think it's important to just remember that just because your best friend is spending time with other people, it doesn't take away from your relationship with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also just remembering that your best friend's allowed to have other friendships. If you're taking yourself away from that, as hard as it can be, it's your best friend, you know, it's normal that they want to seek other friendships. It doesn't have anything to do with you. It just means that that's a normal human behavior to want to seek, you know, more than, it's okay to have more than one friend. And that's a very normal, you know, want and desires to have more than one friend. Each friend will give that person different things, and that's okay. So I think putting your own needs and jealousy and, you know, protectiveness aside, and just knowing that if your best friend wants to talk to other people, that's completely okay. And it's what's best for them. So totally understand this question, totally can relate, but putting their needs first and what their, you know, their wants first is so important, as hard as it can be. Alrighty, that is the end of Q&A. Now, my darling Amy, can you please announce to the people?
Let's do it together on the count of three.
What are we going to do? What do we even say on the count of three? We haven't rehearsed this.
Scrap this bit out.
I'm going to leave this.
Why don't we be like, okay, 1, 2, 3. The site collaboration.
No, that's lame. Amy, can you please announce to the people what we have been putting our heart and soul and tears into for the last 6 months?
Okay, everyone, I know you are probably itching in your seats.
Most of you probably already know.
Yeah, they're probably like, oh my gosh, come on.
Change the record.
But Kat and I have launched our own online psychological support platform. And what I mean by that is we have our own website in which you can see us for psychological services like counseling sessions, couples therapy. We do like a shorter check-in session. So our philosophy behind this was to provide convenient, affordable, great quality psychological support for everyone everywhere.
Yes, we have been receiving lots of messages since we started this podcast for people wanting to come and see us personally, which is so flattering, but we were both in jobs where that was not possible. So I think after we received a few of these, we thought, Amy, we better do something about this. So we thought it'd be such a great way. We found such a gap in the market with people who perhaps were acknowledging that perhaps they needed some mental health support but just weren't sure where to go. They didn't really want to go to the doctor and sit there. They maybe had bad experiences with previous therapists before. So we wanted to kind of get rid of all of those roadblocks and make a really convenient after-hours support and provide support for people in the comfort of their own home, specifically now during COVID, and for people who maybe have disabilities or can't leave their home for one reason or another. We thought this is such a fantastic way to offer really high quality support at prices that we've made as affordable as possible and at times which suit you guys, because we know how it's hard fitting everything in. We're so busy at the moment. So we offer shorter sessions. We offer a 30-minute session. We offer or longer sessions. We offer 50-minute sessions. We also have offered a free complimentary 10-minute session where you get to know us and we get to know you guys. It's really daunting seeking out for mental health support and you don't know what to expect. You don't want to commit to a whole hour or half an hour. You don't want to spend your money if you're just not really sure, you feel really uncomfortable. So we're offering just a 10-minute video chat with either one of us to, you get to know us a little bit more. We get to know you, and we can just, you know, have a really friendly conversation and you can decide whether it's right for you. So it's no obligation. There's no obligation with therapy at all, but you might come away thinking, yeah, that sounds sweet. I think I'd really get along with them, or maybe I'm not ready right now and that's okay. So we're so excited to announce this.
We are.
So check out our website. We've got a brand spanking new website and it's very fancy. And we will leave all of the links. We've got a new Instagram as well. So we'll leave all of the links in the show notes. Have a little look. It's no pressure, obviously. Just have a little look and see if this is something that might be up your alley. And yeah, we'd be excited to meet you guys.
Yeah. Or maybe you know someone that might benefit from accessing an online service. If you have got a friend or a family member who might be a little bit intimidated by seeking the traditional form of treatment or support for a mental health concern, we are so accessible and we have tried to be as affordable as possible. So maybe let them know.
Well, that's our special announcement. Sorry, we have clickbaited it for so long, but we finally announced it. It's finally in the open. We can finally share it. We're just so, so excited about this. We've already received so much support and love from everyone on Instagram. So thank you so much to you guys. You've made this possible. You're the ones that gave us this idea. So really, we're thanking you. And we're very excited for this new venture. The podcast will continue, of course. Never fear. We're not going anywhere. We are just trying to fit everything in.
Alrighty, guys. Thank you so much for listening to Season 3, Episode 1. We will be back in your listening ears soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you want to see more, please feel free to follow us on Instagram at The Psychology Sisters. To make sure that you never miss another episode, please hit the subscribe button in the podcast app. If you know someone who might enjoy this episode, we would love you to share this with them. Please note the content shared in this episode is purely educational and does not replace personalized advice from a mental health professional. See you next week for more spicy science and sexy self-help.